The SparkFile podcast may contain profanity and other adult content.
Please use your discretion.
When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my SparkFile. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my SparkFile. I jump into my SparkFile. Let's open up the SparkFile.
Welcome to the SparkFile, your one-stop pod for creative inspiration.
I'm Laura Camion.
And I'm Susan Blackwell. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome. You may be asking yourself, what exactly is a SparkFile? Where do I get one? What do I file in it? These are good questions, and we have got answers.
Yes, we do. A SparkFile is a place where you consistently collect all of your inspirations and fascinations. And if you're like us and you're making shit all the time, you know that sometimes the well of inspiration can run a little dry. We're here to refill it.
So we are on the lookout for fresh ideas, images, and inspiration that spark our creativity and pique our curiosity, things that inspire us to get up off of our asses and make things like this podcast.
Or a specific universal song that articulates the deepest, darkest parts of yourself.
Or an arrangement of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road that fucking haunts my dreams.
Or a hit Broadway musical with an all-female leadership team.
Or a concert tour peppered with so much delicious profanity.
On today's Makersode, we're going to talk to someone who truly sparks us.
And that special someone is Sarah Bareilles. Sarah, yeah! Welcome to
The SparkFile.
Hi.
That's how we pronounce it.
That's beautiful.
Thanks.
What region is that from?
So we're going to start with the SparkFile price of admission just really quick. Will you please tell us a creative risk you've recently taken, something that scared you, made you shit your pants a little bit, something maybe that wasn't perfect but was progress? What you got?
Mm. I am currently dead center in the middle of something that is not perfect but in progress that I shit my pants about on a regular basis.
On the regs?
On the regs. Buying new undies, let me tell y'all.
Well, right.
I have recently embarked on a TV
project. This is a new frontier.
A new project for Apple TV about a young songwriter. It's called Little Voice. Mm-hmm. And I'm executive producing and writing all the music for it.
Oh my
and
God.
It's the most intense thing I've ever done. And it's currently thrown back into that feeling of like, I have no idea how to do this. It's not so dissimilar to how I felt in the beginning stages of Waitress.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I'm pairing with Jesse Nelson, who was my collaborator on Waitress as well.
Awesome.
So there's some familiar territory and a lot of unfamiliar territory and just a lot of people carrying heavy equipment everywhere right now, which is just what
Are you
happens.
In filming?
Yes, we're shooting.
In filming.
Oh my God.
I couldn't get seen for the central character of the young singer-songwriter,
much
actually,
to your surprise.
We did see you. It was beautiful. I don't know.
Can you imagine?
We saw you.
I did not book.
That role.
Tell me a specific thing that you're just like, God, this makes me want to shit my pants. Mm-hmm.
Well, right now, kind of on a day-to-day basis, we're having to troubleshoot how to make the music talk to the actual filming process. And we're trying to capture a lot of this live, knowing that so many of the elements of just shooting in New York make that really
impossibly hard. Challenging.
So trying to coordinate and collaborate with a certain amount of pre-records, and the producer I'm working with is not in town. And so recently, for example, we were shooting in the city and I was sort of like the one on set that was supposed to like know how to do it.
And I'm like, were you like, I don't know how, I've never fucking done this.
I don't really know how to do this. So I'm just, you know, walking around with my headset on and trying to pretend like I know what I'm doing and making decisions. And
this fills my heart with love for you.
Oh God, it shouldn't. I mean, but you know what I do think is that as creators, if you're not willing to sort of not know what you're doing, I don't imagine there's a lot of growth happening.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's really the times when I look back on my life and I feel like I actually took the longest strides forward was the times where I really just did not see the ground beneath my feet for a long time. So
we talk about this this concept a lot.
We were talking about this this morning.
This morning, artists and originals, which is a book that came out a couple years ago about people who think originally. There's a misperception that they don't feel fear, like and doubt, that they have such confidence that they're so sure their idea is going to be genius and it's going to explode. And the exact opposite is true, is that, you know, people who are creating and coming up with original ideas, they all feel fear. They all feel a shit ton of doubt, and they do it anyway.
Yeah.
And that's true. On the regs.
Which is yes. An alternative title for the podcast.
Just
that'll
really
be your spinoff.
I want to just ask one more question about that before we go to our next topic, but how do you handle it? Do you just like throughout the day just think, it's okay. I just don't know. And that's okay.
I'm going to fucking figure this out.
Let me tell you what I am learning in real time is that it's not a straight line. I have good days and bad days. On my good days, I can really let things roll off my back. I can make decisions lightly, knowing that they may or may not be the right ones. And mm-hmm. that you do the best you can.
Oh God, what are the bad days?
And the bad days are literally like, I can't stand the sight of people. I have to hole up in my office. I'm like clinging to my meditation practice to try to save me. I like can't have, I'm just a raging bitch. And I just don't, it's just some, and some days are like, all that and the other, like everything in between. I'm amazed at how long the days feel right now. It feels like I've gone through like this epic journey.
But they are long days. You're not just imagining things. These filming days, I'm guessing, are very long days.
It's like, why do people do this?
But why do people do eight shows a week? Why
I know.
Do people do
right.
shit?
Right.
I know. And you really do end up having, when you get those sweet moments of, I mean, there is something deeply exhilarating about this kind of massive collaboration mm-hmm. where you're literally looking around at hundreds of people all kind of communing to make this one thing happen.
And they all have an essential job.
Job.
There's
exactly.
No, like chaff. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's really interesting. And it, on the other hand, it makes me really crave a more intimate experience. So then it's, you know,
yeah.
It's all of the
so
things.
On your good days, you're more flowing and you can and let things roll. And on your bad days, everybody better watch the fuck out.
Yeah.
Or anywhere in between.
I think it has to do with like, you know, accepting that it's just not going to be perfect. It all is going to keep changing in front of your eyes. And the thing you thought you were aiming at is not really available. And so it's, you have to use what shows up.
Yeah. I ran into a little technical thing this week and I was like, I kept having to say to myself, this will not always be an impasse. Somehow you or somebody is going to fucking figure this out. You have to.
Right. Like was it like a computer problem?
It was a ghost in the machine.
Oh, yeah.
With a sound file of of an episode that we're like, we love. We can't really go back and recapture it. And it's too boring to talk about, but it was stumping the experts. Yeah. And for some reason it was just so... But I spent like a day being like, I'm going to figure this out. You will figure it out. It will get figured out. Like somehow this impasse will give way to something else.
Yeah.
But it's weird on those days how much capacity that eats for me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I meditate too. And if I didn't, I would lose my goddamn mind.
Yeah.
Sarah, for people who possibly live off the grid or don't know your work,
but who are really into podcasts.
Yes, who are really into podcasts. They're listening to this. Maybe they're in space, but listening now. How do you describe yourself as an artist? Like, what all do you do?
How do I describe myself as an artist? I mean, I always would probably start with songwriter. Feels like the sort of deepest identifying. Those are my identity politics.
Yeah. Songwriter.
Songwriter first. And then I think sort of the modes of expression kind of all are born from that. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's like the hub,
and then things spoke out
then
of that.
Things spoke out of that, you know, as a writer or a singer or a producer of any, you know, kind of like the show I'm working on now, or waitress as a musical.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a songwriter feels like the deepest sort of identity for me.
When did you start thinking of yourself as creative? Do you remember?
I was really young when I felt like just a profound connection to music. My parents split up when I was 12, and my sister, I'm a lot younger than my sisters, so it's 6 and 9 years older than So I did a lot of like roaming the woods by myself, singing songs, like making up songs and talking to imaginary
friends. I'm so glad you're still alive.
Entertain yourself.
So glad you're not dead in the ditch.
Me too. I was very young when I started writing songs, when I started singing. I
want to just shout out to our somebody that helped us with this podcast, our friend Lily Clark, who loves you, and she surfaced so much research on you in preparation for this, and she sent us a video of you singing at a eighth grade freshman year. It was like a band concert in a gym. Does this ring a bell?
Yes, that's eighth grade.
And the thing. You did a beautiful job, but the thing that made me laugh so hard about that fucking video is there's a girl in the band sitting behind you with a saxophone across her lap, and she is just like picking her nails. She could give a shit. And I was like, the future
like, I wore a vest for you, bitch.
You wore the fuck out of that vest.
And she's like, but when can I play my sax?
But I was just like, I don't even think she was like, when can I go like get with my football player boyfriend? She was interested in picking her nails. It made
really
me laugh so
funny.
Hard. And I was like, I bet that's the same girl who's like, I was in eighth grade with Sarah Bareilles. I put money down on that. So you started feeling like you were creative when you were pretty young. When did you feel like you found your own voice, or you were like, that could be as a songwriter or as a vocalist, I guess?
I think being a vocalist sort of arrived first. And I think in this sort of oddly distorting kind of way, it was how I felt like I had value. As a young person, I struggled with weight growing up. I was teased really badly, and I went to Catholic school and had a really I wouldn't say it was an overall horrible experience. It was kind of a mixed bag, but I was teased a lot as a kid, and so had sort of developed really negative self-speak and continue to struggle with that to this day. But being a good singer started to be the thing that people liked about me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I think I developed this kind of distorted relationship with music and why it was important in my life. And so the songwriting was something that I was pursuing. And then I had a kind of a traumatic experience where I played a song that I had written in front of my high school class at like a recital, or I don't remember what it was, talent show or something. And they didn't jive with it. And I've said this story before, but I was listening to a lot of Tori Amos, and I think I was really trying
to serve us some Tori Amos.
I was just really reaching, and it was about a drowning water dancer, and I don't think I even knew what the song was about. And my dear little class didn't get it, and I was mortified, and I sort of went into my hole.
Like I feel like this is a... what you're talking about here, this really hot moment, is critical. Mm-hmm. How did they let you know that they did not like the
song? Lack of applause. Like, not that they didn't. They like, just, it was that, it's undeniable. Like, you know, it's just, you just understand when the audience doesn't, it still happens, when the audience like doesn't quite get it, or they're just not, you didn't strike the chord with them.
When you said you went into your hole, for how long, and what does that look like from the outside? Like, you went, did you stop singing for a while? Did you stop sharing your songs?
I stopped sharing songs completely for years.
Yes.
And then it wasn't until I was 21 and living in Italy when I started sharing songs again.
In a foreign land. So fucking far away from high school.
And really, I was just surrounded by my one true love, pizza. Which is why I finally had the courage.
Safe coming out. Also, maybe a language barrier. They wouldn't know. What is she singing about? It sounds good.
Like water dancers.
A water dancer.
Fine,
I love
into it.
I would love it if you would just bring that song out of the trunk and cover it.
Songs are all written by drowning water dancers, so they all stop making sense at some point. I remember it. And what does that mean? It's very morbid.
But you know what? We love it. Keep going.
Yes, I mean, we love it.
That's the only thing I remember.
God bless.
Water dancers. When you reflect on your life thus far, is there like a line of demarcation at any point, maybe an event or a chapter that you think of your life in terms of like before that event happened and after this event happened?
Yeah. The most recent one that was kind of the newest reorganizing principle was waitress, working on the
really?
Musical waitress. Yeah. I feel like my life actually pretty, the demarcation is really pronounced actually. Like my life as an artist, as a person, the people who are in my life, the kinds of creative projects that have come to me, mm-hmm. My profile as an artist, my profile as a sort of just a public persona. It's mm-hmm. really shifted because of waitress in a way I would never, ever, ever have
Are
imagined.
You into it?
Yes, because it's the kinds of projects are deeply creative. So mm-hmm. I met J.J. Abrams because of waitress. And so right. that's why I'm doing a television show.
Right.
Is because with of
yeah.
waitress.
Yeah.
And it's why I met T-Bone Burnett. It's because of my relationship, who's a, for those yeah. of you who don't know, he's a really massive legendary producer. And he did my last record. And I met him because of waitress, because of my relationship with
so
Jesse Nelson.
Interesting, because yeah. you had so many successful albums prior to that, and then it was waitress that made that connection.
I think there's something about, and this is so true of the theatrical community at large, is that there's a really legitimizing effect of working in theater. I think it's really it's so highly regarded and by the intellectual community and yeah. by and. Even if you're making musicals about pie, there's something like really revered about being able to accomplish something in theater mm-hmm. in particular. And I have noticed that, yeah, doing this one project in this one location, I mean, mm-hmm. now it's in other places as well, but I was amazed at mm-hmm. how many people.
There is a legitimacy, I think, especially with Broadway or maybe the West End. Like when we were working on Title of Show, I remember the number of times I told people, like, I had no idea the number of stars that have to align for your show to go to Broadway. It's not just like, oh, we booked a theater. Yeah. Yeah. And yet it's like there are shows in line for every one of those theaters that no one knows, you know, just to get into one, and then for the alchemy of the show to elicit the response from an audience. Like there's so many yeah. factors that go into it.
Completely.
Yeah. Magic must be made.
For me, it actually was it landed at a time. It reintroduced me to the idea of collaboration on any kind of, you know,
really significant,
real significant
yeah.
level. And it made me just sort of reframe. I felt like I was just starting over again. I felt like it was so playful and it was so yeah. joyful. And I was like reminded that work can be exciting and fun and feeling like discovery, as opposed yeah. to sort of like the grind and the slog of when you get into those grooves of what you do.
You mm-hmm. seem like a person who is curious and likes to keep like climbing mountains, different kinds of mountains, as opposed to being like, I do a thing, and that thing is I'm a singer songwriter, and what's changing is the venues are getting bigger, or mm-hmm. the, you know what, the audience is expanding. You seem like somebody who you like to keep. And now I'm executive producing a TV show. Do you know what I mean?
I think that it's, I mean, sometimes I attribute it to the fact that I'm a Sagittarius. And the good side of that is that we tend to be, you know, wanderers. And, but, you know, the bad side of that is that I get bored and I get anytime something starts to feel too much like a routine, I really reject that
yeah.
and I feel sort of allergic to it in a way that's like really annoying, where it's like, but I love this coffee shop. Why are we fucking looking for another coffee shop? Like, and we just like, and I'm like, but we've been there so many
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do all the aforementioned: singer, songwriter, pop star, Broadway star, musical theater composer, lyricist, TV producer, award show host. I'm sure there's things I'm missing. You strike me as somebody who seems to be in near constant creative flow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that way?
No.
I have no further questions, Your Honor. How does it feel to you? Because you seem like you are always just like in the flow.
I think that I have had a really long run of big projects that have sort of landed one after another in the last maybe 5 years or so. Okay, kind of coinciding with my move to New York City. I've been here 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And I think that in a way, there's a part of me that's almost wanting to kind of eject from that, where I feel like my nervous system needs a break. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of like, if I were feeling more in the flow of it, it would feel really energizing and rejuvenating. But I think I'm at a stage where I'm tired.
That makes sense to me. And it touches on a thing that we're obsessed with, which is what something looks like on the outside and how it actually feels on the inside. I mean, I'm in your house right now, so I took a really intense shit in your toilet, but we see most of the time see not like curated, but we're seeing like basically your highlight reel.
Yeah.
And so of course it makes sense to me that as you've been climbing all these different mountains and doing all these things that are fresh learning experiences for you, that your nervous system might be like, why don't we take it easy for a minute?
Yeah,
that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that. Like I'm so cynical about social media and what's happening mm-hmm. with our life online in general. I mean, it's really generic to be like, I blame social media, but there really is a problem. It's a sickness. It's a disease. Mm-hmm. This idea that there is this other reality that's existing somewhere outside of the room you're actually sitting mm-hmm. in. And I see like it's had a totally negative effect on my life. The idea that anytime now, I don't know if you guys experience this, anytime I'm experiencing something wonderful, my knee-jerk reaction without even thinking it is that I have to put it on my phone. Yeah, I reach for my phone. Where the fuck is my phone? Yeah. And like there's this immediate impulse to disengage.
Yeah.
And because I'm supposed to be putting it somewhere else. I've really taken a step back from social media in general. And I can imagine that I'll just continue to kind of like tiptoe out of the room. It just doesn't feel like it just doesn't serve me.
I'm going to tangent for just 1 second. I watched a TED Talk yesterday by Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and his whole talk was about getting attention versus paying attention. And I was drawn in immediately. I was like, tell me more about that. He was like, as a creative, when I'm paying attention, like when they yell action and I'm in my scene, I'm paying attention to everyone around me, I feel creatively fulfilled. I feel in the moment, I feel really good. And then when we get out of that and I'm driven by getting attention, or when I look at the person that I'm with and I'm like, they have more followers, they're doing more things. When I look at them as competition for attention, that's when I stop enjoying my life as a creative.
Yeah.
And he has a whole thing about social media that's really fascinating. But the concept of paying attention as a source of fulfillment mm-hmm. was spot on.
I love that. The differentiation. I mean, it's so nuanced, but it's like wild.
I got to give that some more thought.
We'll send you a link. We got you. When I bump into something that inspires me, I dump it in my spark files. Could be something that I want to make or how I want to be. I pump it in my spark files. I jump into my spark files. Let's open up the spark files. That was part one of our conversation with Sarah Bareilles. Part two is available now wherever you get your podcasts.